U.S. envoys are headed around the world to make their best case for a national missile defense. President Bush wants this nation to build a missile shield. So far, the technology hasn't shown itself to work. If it does, the shield would dramatically alter the world's balance of power, the mutually assured destruction of the Cold War era. But building any of the installations needed for a shield would violate the 1972 Anti-Ballistic Missile Treaty. The Bush administration is already facing strong opposition in Congress, and U.S. allies in Europe and Asia have expressed urgent concerns that the United States may protect itself but overlook its friends. James Lindsay is a senior fellow in foreign policy studies at the Brookings Institution, joins us here in the studios. Thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you, Scott.
And Robert Colucci is dean of the Georgetown University School of Foreign Service. He joins us from his office in Washington, D.C. Dean Colucci, thank you very much for being with us.
It's a pleasure.
And if we could begin with you, Mr. Colucci, how does the National Missile Defense violate that 1972 treaty?
It does because it envisions to include components that are prohibited by the treaty. It will, at least under some circumstances, include elements that will be space-based. It will have launchers that would exceed what is permitted under the treaty, and it really could not go forward as envisioned without either amending or abrogating the treaty.
Hasn't the strategic world for which that treaty was negotiated ceased to exist? Mr. Lindsay?
It is true that Russia is no longer our enemy, but that doesn't mean that we are allies, and there's a great deal of distrust that still lingers. Russians quite concerned about NATO expansion or bombing campaign against Kosovo, and the Russians and also the Chinese are not going to look upon the deployment of a missile defense that might have the potential to negate their deterrence as an act of kindness. It's one thing for proponents of national missile defense to argue that these countries should be indifferent to our defensive deployments, but the fact is they're not going to be.
Let's follow up with the specific example of China. We're not talking about, at least as I understand it, a range of offensive missiles, a new range of offensive missiles. Help us understand the ground of Chinese concern.
What the Chinese are concerned about is a defense that would negate their deterrent. And the Chinese actually occupy a very different position than the Russians. The Russians have something on the order of 7,000 strategic nuclear warheads. Now, if you look at China, you're looking at a country that has somewhere between 18 and 24 long-range ballistic missiles. And so even a very small system could theoretically, at least, render the Chinese deterrent ineffective.
Mr. Colucci, Japan and South Korea, they have been more supportive perhaps than some other allies, but they have misgivings too, don't they?
In both cases, the response is going to be nuanced and a little bit complicated. In the case of South Korea, the lens through which they will look at American national missile defense will be one in which they assess the impact on North Korea and the plausibility of the United States engaging the North Koreans in discussions that would limit the North Korean ballistic missile threat. And they want that to happen, and they want that to happen because that would increase the likelihood that they will have successful political negotiations with the North. So I think the South Koreans will be unhappy largely about this and will not see anything particularly useful for their security in a national missile defense. For the Japanese, I think there'll be a debate going on between those who will see the national missile defense by the United States as enhancing their security because it makes the American security guarantee to Japan arguably more credible, since we can promise to retaliate in defense of Japan more credibly because we ourselves are protected against retaliation. On the other hand, there'll be others in Japan who will argue, like those in Europe do, that a national missile defense by the United States is overwhelmingly provocative around the world, and particularly to the Chinese, who will attempt to overcome it in one way or another, and when they do, will pose a greater threat than they now do to Japan.
Mr. Lindsay, what about those U.S. allies in Europe, Germany, for example?
European reaction thus far has been fairly muted. I mean, I think the Germans and the French and the British have basically come to the conclusion this administration is committed to building a missile defense. The devil is in the details. They are particularly concerned about any deployment that would be provocative against Russia. They are concerned about preserving at least the internal logic of the ABM treaty in the sense of having agreed upon limits with the Russians. If the administration can do that, I think they will find that European allies, while not being big fans of missile defense, aren't going to throw up any major roadblocks. I think at this point, though, the European allies and Moscow as well are really sort of following the standard advice in parenting guidebooks. And that's when you have an unruly child, what you should do is focus on the positive behavior and ignore the negative behavior. And I think what you saw in the last couple of days is that European capitals and Moscow as well have really focused on the parts of the president's speech they liked, and that was consultations. And they have made it quite clear that they are happy to have the American officials come over and discuss this issue. And the real outstanding question is going to be, is when American officials finish talking, are they willing to listen to what the allies have to say?
What about the feeling of some U.S. allies we've heard expressed that ultimately this proposal for some sort of a shield represents American isolationism?
Well, I think that's really sort of overblown. You can clearly make that argument, and you particularly make it against the system that the Clinton administration had sought to develop, which would have simply protected only the United States. The Bush administration has made it clear that whatever architecture it is going to produce will be an architecture that protects American allies as well as the United States itself. So I think that argument really doesn't stand water. And also, I think the argument many Americans would make is that if you could build a missile defense, and let me emphasize could build one that worked, that if you were able to improve American security, that would allow the United States to carry out its security commitments, as Dean Gallucci mentioned earlier, vis-a-vis Japan.
I actually would disagree slightly, or maybe fundamentally. I think that one of the great appeals of the missile defense to many in the administration and those who favor it elsewhere is that it does appear to give the United States an ability to achieve its security objectives without cooperating with others. I think that is indeed one of its appeals ideologically, along with the idea that the United States will be allowed to be itself in terms of realizing its competitive advantages, that the ABM treaty, like other arms control treaties, constrain the United States. And if the free market would operate in strategic matters as it does in economic matters, the argument would go the United States will do comparatively better than anyone else. I think there's a simple ideological consistency here that is very appealing to some, as it is very troubling to others, the idea that the United States was going it alone.
Gentlemen, thank you both very much.
Thank you.
Robert Gallucci, Dean of the Georgetown University School of Foreign Service, and James Lindsay, who is co-author of the book Defending America, The Case for Limited National Missile Defense.